Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday. It is the 23rd of September, and I remember sitting at my desk last week, and Sarah LaDuc said to me, "So, I'm sorry, how did next week come to be late September?" And here we are, and this month seemed to fly by. I don't know how that happened, but it did indeed. It's wonderful to have you with us. We love when you are here, and we're glad that you took time out of your day to listen to this program and to hear the perspectives of some wonderful panelists. Let me introduce them to you. I also want to remind you that you can be a part of the discussion. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Always great to be here. It's one thing, and if it's not one thing, then it's t'other.
One thing t'other. Or
one thing t'other.
One thing t'other. One thing or t'other. That's right. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you're here, and we will try to stay with the one thing, and we'll hold the t'other till later, maybe. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics Vera Acarius-Kelly is with us. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I was also thinking, didn't we start fall, and now it feels again sort of like late summer?
It does. It's a little humid outside. It's got a little stickiness. No, it's weird.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah, still the mosquitoes. We haven't gotten your frost yet.
I think everybody's waiting for that.
Kill those rascals. Not kill them, but have them end their life cycle. We want that to happen while still not killing our mums because they just cost too much. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, fresh from a taping of the Media Project. Sir Ira, good morning.
Good morning, Joe, and everyone. Glad to be back.
Good to have you back. Thank you very much. We also are thrilled to have our next guest with us. He joins us as often as we can get him, and he is here today. He is the chairperson of the Capital District Latinos, Dan Irizarry. Dan, good morning. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Happy Hispanic Heritage Month, and a shout out to Representative Stefanik. Happy Hispanic Heritage Month, Congresswoman. Yeah. Or as she would want it to be known, Great Replacement Month.
Dan's starting with material. I like this. This is good. Well, Dan, welcome. Thank you very much for being here. A reminder, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we will we'll get started with the news of the day. And Alan, I just yes. wanted to real quick, are we mentioning what we're doing on Monday?
No, but you should, Joe. I mean, it really would, it falls to you to do that.
I meant to ask you that off the air, and then I forgot, so I figured I'll just ask you on the air. But Monday, Alan and I will be here, and we got money to make. It's that time. It's ready for the fall fun drive.
Look, dear friends out there, you know you are so smart, and you know, and we know. pardon me, that we couldn't possibly have this radio station without keeping it going, and you've been doing that just fine all along. But now we have to do it again. It's time to make the, what do you call that? To make the
donuts.
Yeah. Make the donuts. Yeah. What do you call it? That's right. No, we really have to do it. And we're depending on each and every person. I mean, every person to say, okay, I use it. I can put something in some little part of this and we'll start on Monday. And the sooner we get over with it, then we'll be done. And we have been doing just fine. You've always been there in a way that's been so magnificent. And, well, it'll be great to see if you're still there.
Absolutely. We never know. We always hope, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you always worry about it.
You always worry about it. You lose sleep the night before, and that's what happens.
But we'll start on Monday morning. We'll open up the lockbox, and we'll start. And I think, you know, look, a year ago, a year and a half ago, we thought, well, you know, eventually we'll get back to normal fund drives. But We're still not in a place where we're at all comfortable of having people in the building. Our guests are still remote, our panelists and our other guests, our radio guests. And so we can't have everyone in the building like we normally have and do right. it the way we've done it for so many years, the wonderful system that you created over there. So we do it this way.
We're doing it because we have to. It's that simple. We all have to. So many people write us, and unsolicited, really, folks, about, Joe, you've seen it day after day how
Absolutely.
People love the roundtable, love the station, couldn't do without it. Well, now comes that point in which you say, okay, can you do $1,000? Can you do $10,000? Can you do $5? Whatever you can do, if everybody does something right away, we can end it in one day. And we've come very close to that, right, Joe?
Absolutely, we sure have. And in fact, they all, I don't know about you, but I just think the last year and a half has been a mush. But I think, you know, we did it in just 2 or 3 days last time. I think the time before that, in the February drive, I think we did do it in a day.
Yes.
And it's amazing. It really is stunning. By the way, please don't think if when we say we open the lockbox, you know, if you want to get it in now, you can. It's WAMC.org. WAMC.org, and just go to donate now, and you can do it that way.
Now, there is some money in the lockbox. Frankly, I don't remember how much.
But we'll tell you on Monday.
Yes, that's right.
We'll do the official unveiling.
That's right, Joe. We'll tell everybody on Monday. I think it's like $200,000, something like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. It's good, unless you think of it, then we have to make $800,000.
Well, yes. There is that.
So we know you'll be with us. You always are. We love you so much for that. And just giving you a little a tip as to where we're headed over the next week or two. So there we go. Let's go to what's happening in the news.
One more thing on that.
Yes. Yes, please, please.
And that is every once in a while, because most people do understand and
yes.
most people do make do what they have to do. But every once in a while, some good charitable person will let us have it and say, why don't you save this for the fund drive? Because we can't do a fund drive. We can't get 19 people into this place without really putting everybody at risk. So we're not doing that. So you understand that. Okay, just as long as everybody
yes.
gets it.
Yeah, we can't do that. And people aren't comfortable, and we want people to be comfortable, and we, I mean, we could go on this for a long time, and I don't.
It could be Monday.
But what I want to say is that, you know, it's a very loose, lovely thing that happens in that fund drive room, and if you can't do it that way, well, the way we've been doing it the last 3 or 4 drives has worked. We've gotten it done. So we'll continue to do it that way. And eventually, as you say, we'll get the tetherball out again.
And we'll
get the volleyball back to camp.
And we'll continue to have a radio station. That's the most important thing of all.
That's right.
And
okay.
not just any radio station.
And finally, the last point on this, too, is that, you know, what we've been able to do in our time together when Alan is on here with me, and we go and we'll make a sizable chunk of money, and in 2 hours, and then you have the rest of the day with the radio station, and you still get headlines and commentary from our wonderful panelists, as opposed to the other way where we're we've taken over the airwaves. So there is that to look forward to as well. All right, WAMC.org, WAMC.org, if you want to get in early, and we'll go do it all official-like on Monday morning. Okay, so.
There's only one other problem, Joe, and you and Al know what it is, and that is mosquitoes.
That's right. They can screw up an entire fund drive.
Exactly.
But I'm hoping that by Monday we'll have had a good killing frost, and that problem will be eviscerated.
I know that this is very unpopular, but I'm for the execution of mosquitoes.
Yeah, I know. I know. Little zappers. Okay, so there were a few moments, you know, I think, and I hope I'm not overly giving too much commentary here and when I'm trying to set up what we're going to talk about this morning, but I think there has been confusion about booster shots. I think yesterday, as the news was coming out from the FDA, there was even a little bit more confusion, although now some of that dust has landed and settled. So here's where we are right now. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will today take up the thorny question of who is eligible for the Pfizer coronavirus booster shot. The decision will shape government guidance affecting millions of Americans. And this comes after the FDA made its move yesterday. The FDA, you will recall that after the president said that in September 20th, which is 3 days from now, 3 days from today, 3 days ago, I should say, was saying that we could start giving the booster shots. Well, that got slowed down when the FDA and the CDC got involved. Now, scientific advisors to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will take up that challenge today of who qualifies for the coronavirus booster and why. On Wednesday evening, the FDA authorized booster shots of the vaccine for people over 65 who received their second shot at least 6 months earlier. The agency also authorized boosters for adult Pfizer recipients who are at risk of severe COVID-19 or who are at risk of serious complications because of exposure to the virus in their jobs. Roughly 22 million Americans are at least 6 months past their second Pfizer dose, according to the CDC. About half are 65 or older. But who exactly risks becoming severely ill? What does it mean to be exposed on the job? Do teachers count as exposed? Do frontline healthcare workers do, but do grocery store workers count? And what about Americans who got the Moderna shot? What about Americans who got the J&J or Johnson & Johnson shot? Those are questions scientists on the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices will debate today, and their decisions will shape the federal government's guidance. The committee's recommendations are not binding, and state officials sometimes implement their own criteria. Still, its decisions are likely to influence who gets the booster shots in practice. In its deliberations on Wednesday, the CDC's advisory committee zeroed in on those aforementioned unanswered questions. So, that from the New York Times. Now to Alan Chartok.
Well, Joe and everybody, you know that I have always taken some brilliant political scientist who said, the words of some brilliant political scientist who said, politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources. And now we are talking about vaccines that are, in fact, scarce resources. For example, do we keep it all in the United States, or do we do what we certainly have the capacity to do, which is to send it out to all over the world? The United States will always be known as a friend if we do that. There will be those who say, no, they're doing it for nefarious reasons or this or that. But I'm telling you now that there is always this issue of who gets it and who doesn't. And that is something that we are faced with virtually every day that we suffer this crisis.
Dan Arizari.
Well, I continue to echo what the president has said about this being a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I think the science always has to keep up with unfolding events. So what people don't understand about some of the changes, right, when the FDA comes out and says one thing and then they have to change, much like when Dr. Fauci made certain pronouncements and, you know, the right pointed their finger and said, see, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. But the nature of science is that it is constantly in motion, trying to catch up with events that have already occurred and try to explain them. So, you know, this discussion about, you know, needing boosters, not needing boosters, and people saying, you know, on the right, pointing to that and saying, see, this whole vaccine thing is just a lot of garbage, is, you know, putting people in public health in a bind. I will say this, that we have had some tremendous success at the Cultural Empowerment and Community Engagement Center in partnership with Assemblyman McDonald, who is also a pharmacist, in vaccinating close to 600 people at our clinic, which may not sound like a lot, but most of those folks are from the undocumented community, And we've had an 82% second dose success rate, which is higher than even the county of Albany. And so this is a difficult business of vaccinating. It's very nuanced, and people just want to hear black and white. You know, they just want things to be said and for it to be immutable, and it's not possible when you're dealing with a virus that has a mind of its own, so to speak.
Well, well said, and congratulations on the great number. I mean, that is a great success, and obviously there's much more work to do, but congratulations. I want to hear from both Vera and Ira. We do have to take a break. When we come back, we will hear from them. Plus, we'll get your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're talking about the CDC and the FDA and the booster issue of where we are in all of that. We heard from Dan, we heard from Alan, and now I would like to hear from Vera. Go ahead.
Thanks, Joe. So I think we need to sort of separate the domestic discussion we have from the international context. And let me start discussing the domestic issue, because that is what, you know, we initially began to think about. So one of the concerns, of course, is that Pfizer versus Moderna versus J&J injections have different levels of effectiveness over time. So more recent results show that the Pfizer vaccine is about 88% effective after 6 months of the second shot versus Moderna, which required a 4-week period between the first and second shot versus the Pfizer 3-week period, is 93% effective. So that has created some sense of insecurity among the general population, but the main discussion really is right now about who should get access to Pfizer, and Moderna and J&J will later on, position themselves for potential boosters or no need for boosters. I think J&J will likely have the second shot. But what is really interesting to think about is that data keeps arriving on a daily basis. New studies are published internationally, globally, and domestically. We collect data all the time on the results and effectiveness of those vaccines. And it is healthy to have a debate among scientists rather than represent sort of this unitary perspective, which you would find in an authoritarian structure. So while people might find it occasionally confusing that there are different perspectives among physicians, this is very common practice. Any person who is familiar with complex medical issues, they know, for example, before surgeries, they have medical board meetings to discuss your case. So where numerous experts discuss the pros and cons of certain treatments. And this is sort of nationwide, where they look at data that is refreshed, renewed, and of course becomes more valuable as soon as you have data specific to age groups, pre-existing conditions, locations in the country, and so on. So this is very important to consider, and I think it's not as confusing as sometimes it is made out in public discussions. If you read up on it and stay on top of it, you actually know quite well what the narrowing range is. So it's quite likely that a lot of people will get access to Pfizer booster domestically, including those, of course, with pre-existing conditions, those that are 65 and older, and those that are on the front lines. Now, as you said, Joe, that has to be defined. And we already defined that for the first shot, so right. I think we lay out the tiered plan once again. So I don't find it as confusing. I think people want sometimes to be told what's right and what's wrong, but we're not living in a place that where the government tells you this is what you must do. Even our physicians don't tell us this is what you must do. They lay out options. And the more complicated a medical situation becomes, the more options you might have to decide and become an advocate for yourself. So this is domestically the situation. I'll hold back on the global question because I'm sure we'll get back to that.
Yeah, we will. I understand. Even yesterday in the FDA, I mean, the first thing that they said was 65 and older. And the first question I had, because I was interested in getting it for my in-laws, the shot as soon as possible, because they both got Pfizer. And the question is, well, when can you get it? And that question wasn't really answered. And I would say that's confusion. And we're still waiting for the CDC. So it is a little bumpy. I understand, you know, that overall we're doing what needs to be done, but I still think it adds to some of the question marks that are out there. Ira Fussbell.
But you know, you can already get the booster for Pfizer, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I already got it because I'm immunocompromised and right. I'm on medication that is endangering, my rate for protection was significantly lower. So you don't actually have to wait that long if you just inform yourself and talk to your physicians and, you know, especially if you are immunocompromised or have a serious
right,
underlying health condition.
That has already been approved. Yes.
Yep.
Ira Fussbell.
Well, I don't even know where to start. I appreciate what Vera and Dan said from an academic standpoint. I've been one who's been saying for months on this program, in the face of the criticism that the rollout has engendered, that they're trying to deal with this crisis on the fly, and it's understandable that things are coming up that perhaps they didn't anticipate. But I hope that if in fact this pandemic ever ends, and there is questions as to when or if that will ever happen, or whether we're going to be living with this disease for the rest of our lives and talking about booster shots every year, I hope somebody is taking notes on how this thing has rolled out, so that if the next pandemic comes about in 50 years or in 100 years, there's a better playbook. Because the confusion that you just cited, Joe, is in fact real and is in fact warranted. And the rollouts have not been explained real well in many cases. I think the single, and I hate to say this to give the guy credit, but the single most important thing that happened that's favorable was that Trump urged the speed for the vaccine to be moved as what they called warp speed.
Right.
And in fact, we did have a vaccine a lot sooner than historically we know vaccines are developed. But I'm obviously interested in getting a booster shot. I have Moderna, so I can't get one yet. And I'm not sure when I can get one. And what happens if, they say the booster shot should be 8 months after your second shot. You know, should I start worrying if it's 10 months or 11 months? The entire process has, well, I'm not going to say the entire process. There have been a lot of good things about the process. But as I said, I hope that they figure out what worked and didn't work so that we're better prepared the next time.
You know, the first thing, even yesterday, they were saying, ask your pharmacist, ask your doctor. And I was at the pharmacy last night, and people were asking those questions. The pharmacists don't know yet. They haven't gotten the guidance. They don't even have, they don't know. And
yeah,
because,
you know, I know that they have approved the Pfizer booster for the groups that have been identified. I believe that Alan and Vera have received vaccines. I don't think they're supposed to get them yet. I believe they were cleared for next week. But that if in fact I'm right, it's just another sign of the confusion that's
well,
out
it's
there. You
can immunocompromised. So yes, they were.
Well, I understand, but I don't believe that they have given the okay officially to literally start administering those vaccines. But nevertheless, they are doing it.
No, yeah. I think you're right, Ira. Look, I know that there are some major drug chains which are doing this, which are, in fact, inoculating people with that third shot, the booster shot. It was as simple for Roselle and I to walk in and just sit down and say,
get the shot.
You say we want the shot. And they gave
right,
it.
Right, and that was a couple of weeks ago before they had said, okay, you
yes,
can go ahead and do
right.
it. Because I don't know whether or not, for example, the shot that you most recently got was the same dose as the second shot that you got. It's my understanding
yes,
that there is
the
a question
dose.
As to
there
whether the dosages are going to change.
No, the dosages have not changed. Every dosage is the same on the market. Pfizer is the one that offers
yeah.
the shots. the first, second, third dosage is exactly the same. Moderna if you had two Moderna shots, that dosage is significantly higher than the Pfizer shot, and you are not yet approved for a booster because they're doing studies whether it is necessary and when, or you know, when it might be necessary. So the dosage is significantly higher for those that received Moderna than Pfizer.
But you agree that there is confusion out there. There are a lot of people, perhaps most people, are less intelligent on this matter than you are and the people on this panel are, and thus are wary.
Well, so far we know that if you've gotten either Pfizer or Moderna, both are exceptionally effective vaccines. So the whole discussion over whether you will be endangered if you don't get a booster shot in 6 or 8 months after the last shot is actually immaterial. It is still highly effective. It's significantly more effective as vaccines than hardly any other vaccine we have on the market for other conditions.
All right. Let's, Dan, I heard you wanting to weigh in, so let's go to you, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get to the letters we have.
Sure. Obviously, we're talking about the domestic distribution of the vaccine and boosters, but you know, as the article points out, 79% of wealthy countries have gotten the vaccines distributed, but you know, there is the what we used to call the third world or the underdeveloped world that is still suffering staggering rates of COVID and COVID deaths. And unfortunately, we live in a global community. There's no such thing as borders when it comes to disease. And we have to step up as a country, but also as a globe, to make sure that everyone gets at least a dose of this vaccine. And I think standing in the way is unfortunately the policies of the former administration and their effect on, the way that many of us see America first when it comes to things like vaccines, and to hell with the rest of the world. We're still dealing with that, the hangover from that. But there is a moral obligation here, and we really need to look internally as a country and say, are we going to assume that role of being a leader on this issue?
All right, we'll pause. Go ahead, Vera, and then I have
maybe
to go to break.
I was going to say I agree with everything Dan said, with the exception that we are not the moral leader in the world. We haven't been, and donating is not the answer. Donations of vaccines is not the answer. We just want to reposition ourselves. But what is required is to give permission for other countries to produce the vaccine, right? And that is something.
And pharmaceutical countries don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right, because they are more interested in profit than they are preventing a new mutation. So you and I are on the same wavelength here in terms of, if we do not address this issue of vaccinating the world, we will have new mutations for which we're guaranteed to have. New immunization campaigns worldwide. So the longer we don't allow other countries to produce these pharmaceuticals themselves and want to make money, the longer this international or global crisis will take to resolve.
Well, I'm glad we took the extra 3 minutes because now we have Harmony again on the panel. So that's good. I like that. We've all come to the same page. That's good. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters, and that'll take care of that issue. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. As promised, we'll get to the letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, we go to Jill. Instead of giving us booster shots, give them to the countries who haven't had their first shots yet, in addition to the millions of doses we have already given these countries, which I know we're doing.
And you know what? It's not an either or. There's plenty of product. The president stood up yesterday and said, "We're going to send millions and millions and millions of shots all over the world. So why is this discussion about we shouldn't take one, and I took one, before everybody else gets one? The president.
Well,
I
heard an interview with a physician yesterday who said it's not millions and millions, it's billions and billions.
Of course.
And in fact, they are going to have a shortage, so they do have to make some decisions. But the task is obviously monumental, and the question of whether we'll run out here while we're sending them elsewhere is at least worth considering.
So the reason why we may have a shortage, again, is because we prefer to have pharmaceutical corporations to make enormous profits over permitting various other locations to produce their own vaccines. There Right. is an underlying reason for the potential shortage. This is not because nobody else could produce it. It's because we don't give permission to produce it.
Well, and... Yeah.
And so now to look at the donations as, the most benevolent approach, well, wonderful to donate. So have many other countries. But that is not the answer to the underlying problem. And if we want to seriously wait for two more years to vaccinate most people in the world or 70%, I mean, the problems for all of us will be tremendous.
So Vera, who's holding that up? Is it the pharmaceutical companies? Because I mean, if it's hard enough for just us to get our act together to give booster shots in this country, how hard is it for them to get it up and running in other places across the globe?
Well, we have many countries that actually have thriving manufacturing facilities that we usually purchase from. Let's mention, for example, India. Most of our pharmaceuticals are produced in India these days when there were shipping and delivery problems at the beginning of COVID. That was when, for the first time, we realized, oh my gosh, most of our medical supplies seem to be coming from Asian countries. So the question is, why is it dominated? It's dominated because we have a number of countries in the world that have fabulous production facilities, and we can blame the United States and the European Union countries and the UK for holding on to those facilities and those the access to production instead of disseminating it. So it is the wealthy, technologically advanced countries that hold on to those, if you want to call them, recipes to produce pharmaceuticals.
All right. I want to go get to some letters here before we have a top of the hour break. So let us go. Cameron says, I guess there is confusion. To be clear, on August 13th, a booster for compromised individuals was approved for both Pfizer and Moderna. You can get both at most national pharmacy chains by explaining that you have an immune issue. The current discussion is on Pfizer only and for a larger segment of people. Then we go to...
I just want to mention, I have diabetes. And I didn't even have to mention that. I just walked in and I said, I want it. And they said, fine.
Yeah. And I think, and again, I mean, I mentioned this earlier. I was watching people ask questions yesterday. And this is absolutely no criticism of the pharmacies. They get the information that they're given, and they're trying to interpret it the best they can. And everything's changing very rapidly, so it's difficult. People, I mean, it makes sense if you are listening to All Things Considered last night at 5:30, and they say the FDA has approved booster shots for those 65 and over, that you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to the pharmacy and get my shot. Sure. And then they say, yeah, we haven't heard that yet. We can't do that. We're not ready for that yet.
Although some of them are saying we're
Absolutely.
Ready to do it right now.
Yeah, depending on what they have. And as Ira pointed out, but that's not for Moderna too, which also adds. So there is confusion. But anyway, let's go to Paula, who says, I could have sworn that Dr. Fauci mentioned getting a booster shot 8 months after your last shot. Am I wrong? No, I believe that is true. Why is this so confusing? Why can't the WHO, the CDC, the FDA, et cetera, put their heads together and figure this out already? Call me selfish, but I want to get back to traveling again, like, the before times. Ira.
Well, I'd like to also, but I'm just not certain that it's ever going to be the way it used to be. Beyond the initial crisis, we don't know whether they're going to recommend we have a shot every year like a flu shot, and we don't know how many people are not going to take that shot every year like a flu shot, and people are going to get sick, not like a flu shot, but a lot worse because we know people are dying. I don't know, Joe. I would be foolish to suggest I'm an expert, but I am a citizen who's been around the block, and I'm just sort of turned off by the confusion is as good a word as any. I just expect better from my government, and maybe that's my bad.
Let's see. Mary writes, when a hurricane changes course, we expect FEMA to change their response. Why can't people understand the need for changes with COVID recommendations? I think understanding that is certainly I think we can understand it. It's just how it is communicated. Kathy said,
well, I also, don't you think it has something to do with the misperception that science is the answer, that there's one scientific answer, it remains the same, and then it's applied. And I think people don't necessarily understand how scientific knowledge, you know, is identified and then continues to be adjusted and changed depending on data that arrives. So I think it's a misunderstanding of how scientific data, especially medical data, is collected and analyzed and then communicated. So it's not a stagnant process. And I think this writer makes a very good point. We have to realize, even though we live in a highly advanced, technologically focused, wealthy country, it doesn't mean there's one answer that science provides. And it's not
well, let's not forget where a lot of Americans are getting their news and what that news has been if there's confusion, it doesn't always it has not always existed from the government. It's been promulgated by the right wing media.
Dan, anything to add to that?
I was thinking about, you know, when you sent out the list of topics, I was thinking about how we really exist in a society that is involved in a zero-sum game. It's always, there's no respect for nuance, no understanding of nuance, no understanding of science. We have to have, you know, it's got every answer is has to be absolute and instantaneous, and it's part of the culture that we're living in. And I think there are a lot of reasons why that's the case.
Okay. Yeah. We're up against a break, so I won't. I think we'll talk about it on the other side of the break. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to it. We welcome yours. Panel@WAMC.org. 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 Alan Chartok, Vera Carius Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, and Dan Irizarry make up our panel. Hour two coming up right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. Alan Chartok, Vera Carius Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, and Dan Irizarry. And we have a lot of your letters. Let's get to them, and then I want to move on to other topics. While we still have time, Wendy writes, I think it's worth noting that distribution of the 500 million doses of the vaccine to countries in need won't start until January and won't be complete until about a year from now. That, according to Reuters. Good point. All right, let's go to Lars. There is a difference of opinion. There is difference of opinions about boosters because there are different interests. A New York Times article 2 days ago said that at the current rate of vaccine distribution, it could take developing countries up until 2057, ! to be fully vaccinated. Wealthy countries are pushing for boosters, while the World Health Organization and the UN are pushing for widespread vaccines before boosters. When there are competing interests, guidelines will not be clear. Then, Catherine writes, Vera is speaking so much truth. It's frustrating to see so many other media sources not address this issue, that vaccine manufacturers are not allowing others to make vaccines. The virus is not limited by our geo-social political boundaries, nor our economic ones. All right. Thank you for that. We go to Kathy. I am over 65 years old. I would gladly give my booster to a person in a third world country who hasn't even had one dose. Our rich pharmaceutical companies need to release their patients to allow smaller companies to make and sell the vaccine. Robert writes, why do we only hear the percentage of vaccinated versus non-vaccinated with regards to herd immunity? Why do the percentages never include the vaccinated plus those who have gotten the virus and recovered? That is a good point. We're getting to, you know, two interesting points about that. One is we don't hear a lot about herd immunity anymore. And also the other issue about those numbers that were being given, you know, from the start of COVID, which was March 2020, and it's a year and a half, so it's a long period of time to look at, and some of those numbers can be wonky when they're compared to what's happening on the ground right now.
And also, if I understood correctly, initially there was a lot of conversation about those who actually recovered from COVID, and now it is very clear that also those should be receiving the shots, right? Yeah. So that boosters. Has been adjusted as well, that, you know, you aren't forever protected if you had COVID and developed the antibodies. They become weaker with time, and you need to have the immunization. So we learn every month. We learn something new, or every few weeks we learn something new that we should integrate into our understanding of what is happening. And I think that might be difficult for a lot of people because you have to keep reading and informing yourself, and listening to media reports may not do it, you know, in terms of providing all the answers.
Bob writes, just call it right-wing propaganda or anti-vaccine misinformation. Do not say they say that the vaccination campaign is garbage. That repeats the idea and puts it into our minds once again. Did we say that? Okay. Instead, recite, speak out, declaim, announce the truth with vivid words and images, and do it often. Lean into the mic and say in a quiet, firm voice, the vaccines work, get yours, and protect yourself and the people you care about. Mm-hmm. I think we have made that point, but thank you for writing. Let's go to Bob. We're going to go to William. Fear is being used to bludgeon people's liberty and livelihood. FDR said that there is nothing to fear but fear itself. Joe Biden is limiting the pursuit of happiness to those who are politically compliant.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Anybody get that letter?
Not me.
No. Okay. And then we'll move on. Diane says it's appalling that the states are rationing care to accommodate selfish people who refuse to get vaccinated based on their constitutional right to not be part of the COVID solution rather than to be part of the COVID tragedy that is this country. In spite of not caring about the suffering they are causing by not being vaccinated, the unvaccinated COVID people are getting preferential treatment at the expense of emergency room Americans who present with other serious illnesses and who did the right thing by getting vaccinated and masking up.
That's true.
These people are allowed to die from lack of beds. This is stupidity. All the states should be giving vaccinated people first priority, and the hospital should not allow all the beds to be saved for unvaccinated COVID patients.
Come on.
A certain number of beds away from a COVID unit should be saved for regular patients with serious emergency situations. Anything less then this amounts to criminal negligence, and that is outrageous. What is this country coming to?
Come on.
So another issue I wanted to mention was that in some states, it is now common practice for people who are uninformed about the effectiveness of the vaccines or reject the vaccines or believe in propaganda about the vaccines. They go to hospitals to demand the Regeneron antigen infusions, right?
Yeah.
Those cost $20,000 per patient versus a $2 vaccine, right? So we are now also spending enormous amounts on people that are misinformed about the vaccines. That's eventually going to cause problems.
But the larger question, Vera, and everybody else is, you're in an emergency room, you're a doctor, somebody shows up, are you going to say you didn't take it, so therefore you can't get treatment? I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, that's impossible.
Yeah. Ira.
No, but if I heard one of the letter writers correctly, there are instances already being documented of people who are unable to get into hospitals for treatments other than COVID because the COVID beds have filled up the hospitals.
And we know that's true, and we know it's true, yeah. Ira, and we know what happened the last time.
Yeah.
A lot of people couldn't get elective surgery, for example, during that time. Mm-hmm.
There are those stories, and not really even anecdotal, but there are stories of people who are coming with life-threatening conditions, presenting themselves at the emergency room, being told to either go elsewhere to find, or they're trying to find somebody else because their hospitals are full. Yep. Idaho is the one that's most recent, I believe, having the issue in the state of Idaho. All right, and fine.
Imagine where.
Go ahead, Dan.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Imagine where we would be if things had been different, if the rollout had been different, if Trump had not, kind of cast doubt on this vaccine that he spent so much political capital and energy initially saying that it would be developed at a such a rapid rate.
Yeah.
If all of the citizens of this great nation had resigned to do things that would be beneficial for each other, where would we be in terms of our, immunity rate? Where would we be in terms of being able to say, 90% of the U.S. has been vaccinated. Let's go ahead and send more vaccines to the underdeveloped world. It would be a totally different situation. Yeah. But to a large extent, we continue to live in Trump's world.
Dan, I'll match you and raise you one. And that is, it was not only Trump taking his time with the development of the vaccine. This is the lout who stood up there and told us that there would be no illness in this country. Maybe 5 or 10 cases, he said.
We have it under control.
Yeah. So the idea was that by doing that, he really did leave us, as you have suggested quite correctly, in a very vulnerable situation.
All right, let's go to other topics for this morning. I want to talk about, while we're talking about the president, why don't we talk about the fact that the former president, we'll talk about Donald Trump suing the New York Times and his niece. The Washington Post says in their headline, "If history is a guide, he probably won't win." Donald Trump has once again sued a news organization, alleging that its reporting was unfair to him. If history is any guide, this is only also likely to generate a flurry of attention before quietly stalling out. Trump's latest lawsuit filed Tuesday is aimed at the New York Times and his niece, Mary Trump. It centers on the Trump's publication of in 2018 of a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation of Trump's alleged tax avoidance tactics in the history of his family inheritance. The suit claims that Mary Trump and three Times reporters engaged in an insidious plot culminating in a breach of contract when the paper published records about the former president's finances that were subject to a 2001 family confidentiality agreement. Mary Trump has publicly acknowledged that she was a primary source for the Times' story. Trump has threatened to sue news organizations, including the Times, for decades, but has followed through on only a handful of occasions. It's not clear whether he has ever prevailed in any action that he or his political operation has brought over reporting or published commentary, either in court or through a settlement trial. He has repeatedly run up against laws and judicial rulings that make it difficult for public figures to win judgments against news organizations. As a result, courts have dismissed almost all of those claims, including one last year in which his brother Robert sought to prevent Mary Trump from publishing a memoir about the family that became a bestseller. That is the first book. Mary Trump now has a second book out, and they were unable to stop that as well. Alan.
Well, part of his penchant for suing is to get other people to spend the money that they may or may not have. I don't know that Mary Trump has that much money, certainly not compared to Donald Trump. And it's a well-known thing. I mean, you got to go find a lawyer. You got to, if you can find one, you got to pay them, and you got to pay them a lot of money. You know, there certainly are people who will do it for nothing. But in the end, it's a technique that a bully would use, and this bully has used it all along.
And also, I mean, just when you were talking about the overall cost, I just completely lost track of the thought I had in my head. I'll come back to it. Vera, go ahead.
I mean, for me, I just look at the situation and I think, wow, you know, Trump is up to his standard process of trying to just bully, silence, intimidate, and somehow stir up the base to donate to his cause.
Exactly.
So,
and that was,
this is,
the,
yeah, this
you,
is a
you
public,
just reminded me
effort.
Of oh, what good. I was going to say, which is that when Alan was talking about money, I was also thinking that the money that he'll make on the back of this, of they're out to get me, the bad New York Times, my bad family members, and you can make money on top of it. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Vera, go ahead. But thank you for
Well, I mean, that was my main point. It's about publicity. If he's not succeeding any other way, that's the one way through which he generally reaches his base and gets them re-energized. So that's what this is. It's an effort to get his base reconnected. Since the last, protest event in Washington, D.C., in front of the Capitol, didn't work out that well for him in terms of numbers. He's thinking, oh, gosh, I got to do something to get the base excited again.
All right. Let's go to Ira.
Well, you know, you both have described it well. The Washington Post story that you cited describes it well. We know that Trump has spent a considerable amount of time over his entire history in public life taking people to court. We know that often he doesn't pay the lawyers that he hires, so he finds it more difficult to find a lawyer from each suit. We know that this, to my knowledge, this suit does not contain the word libel, so he's not suggesting that what was written about him was untrue, only that it was unfair. And he will lose this suit if he pursues it any further. It may be dismissed at a summary judgment, which will lessen the financial burden that Mary Trump may face. And in fact, she may face no financial burden if she seeks court costs from Trump after it is dismissed. And as Vera said, he is doing this because he's going after the quote-unquote fake news, so his supporters will see that he's not afraid to go after the fake news, and this specific case is going to go away very quickly. It's laughable. The New York Times is entirely in the clear. You don't have to be a lawyer or a journalist to know that, and it's just more smoke and mirrors by this guy.
Dan.
Yes, Joe. I'd like to take narcissism for $200, please.
Go ahead. You have command of the board.
This is a narcissistic personality, right? Everything has to be about him. He must wake up every day, as he did when he was in the White House, and consider what he could do to remain relevant. And this is just another, this is the 6 foot whatever, 350-pound toddler jumping up and down and saying, look at me, look at me.
So far, not since the election, which obviously he lost, and so it didn't work in helping him get reelected, but it seems to be working in continuing to make him the central figure of the Republican Party, and that somebody who is not going away. And this kind of lawsuit helps him do that.
Let's try to remember, everybody, that this is the Trump Supreme Court. That while, Ira's injunction, his warning that, in the past, the First Amendment has really stood the test of time, and we have seen New York Times versus Sullivan and all of those cases in which, the right of the press to even be wrong is quite strong. Nevertheless, we've got those characters sitting up there on the Supreme Court, many of whom have been called out by the press. I would just like to remind everybody that there is the possibility that this kind of a case goes up the line and gets to that court.
I don't think that's going to happen with this case. This is a loser from the starting gate, and that's going to be determined very quickly by lower court judges.
Well,
it won't hold up.
But Ira, my dear friend.
Yeah, I understand the Supreme Court is out there, but he's going to have to find a lawyer willing to work for free to get it all the way up to the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry, say that again?
He's going to have to find lawyers willing to work for free because the longer it takes, it costs him money, too, and money that he typically doesn't pay. And, you know, if he wants to find some pro bono lawyers who want to affiliate themselves with him, then he'll find those lawyers. But, I don't know anything about the lawyer who he has hired for this course, for this case, other than he is described in the story in the Washington Post as a Bedminster, New Jersey-based attorney. And I don't want to leap to too many conclusions, but it is unfair to conclude that this is somebody he met at the golf course that he owns.
Or he's the golf course's attorney. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. He could be a member. Who knows? And I'm not disparaging this lawyer, but he is a Bedminster lawyer. He's not a Washington lawyer. He's not a New York City lawyer. And,
I smell a free membership at Bedminster.
Yeah, well, that's true. That could be. What's the phrase? I can't remember. He'll get that instead of a
quid pro quo.
Quid pro quo. But yeah, I don't even think it would probably be a membership. Yeah, in kind. Maybe just get like a continental breakfast for two nights or so, or two mornings, something like that.
Maybe you'll give him an extra two strokes on the course.
Not where I thought you were going, but thank you. All right, let's go to. Let's see. I want to run to, we have about 5 minutes, so I would like to talk about, let's just go to a couple of letters here because we only have a few moments. Heather writes, quite frankly, after seeing how the government has handled the pandemic, I'm more than happy for the drug companies to control the process, unfortunately. Also, if other countries are allowed to produce the vaccine, don't you have the risk that the governments will sell those vaccines for profit rather than distributing them to their own people? Wasn't that issue discussed when India was being ravaged by the Delta variant? I'm sure the panelists are much more knowledgeable than I am on these matters, but it seems that these are valid questions. What do you think?
Sure, they're valid questions, and as long as corruption exists, and it does in many of these countries, we have seen it time and again, people will take advantage of that, and it's a very good question.
Vera?
Well, dissemination of the vaccine is a significant issue. I think Biden also announced, in addition to donating vaccines, that us all Americans or taxpayers, are sending $320 million to a fund that will help to actually educate health professionals on how, in various countries, how to store and then disseminate the vaccine. So this is not a simple bring it to the country and then it's over, right? And corruption is everywhere at different levels, of course. But we also need to remember that not all the vaccines were developed in the United States either. You know, there's the assumption that the vaccines come from within the United States. That is not correct. Vaccines are often frequently developed by teams, global teams. We have a number of Pfizer, for example, manufacturers here, but BioNTech is the company in Germany that actually developed this vaccine. And interestingly enough, the founders of that company are immigrants to Germany. So, this is a multi-layered, complex issue, and nobody should dominate access and control over vaccines.
Dan or Ira, anything to add to that?
No, I bow to Vera's expertise.
All right. Let's go to.
Wondering. Maybe Vera can shed some light on this. What was it like when the antivirals for AIDS were discovered?
I mean, you know, we all know the Bush administration, or rather George Bush, after his post-presidency, made it his mission to get people the drugs, the antivirals, to treat AIDS. Was there a similar kind of dynamic playing where the developed countries were getting all that technology?
Mm-hmm. It's very similar, Dan. It's a very good question. Actually, Dr. Fauci was deeply involved in that particular process with the antiretroviral medications. And he was also, he now talks about how he should have been faster in terms of supporting the development of that particular medication. And then, of course, it was primarily available to people in the United States and Western Europe. And then only later was it disseminated in sub-Saharan African countries, which suffered greatly for a decade longer because the medication was not made accessible for people unless they were extremely wealthy. So very similar patterns existed then.
All right, let's see. We'll go to one more letter, and then we'll take a break here because we are up against it. Joseph writes, great show today, panel. As always, it seems that too much attention is being paid to Mr. Trump. It's like fanning a dying flame. We should focus on the current administration and give them a chance for their efforts to shine. Biden is not perfect, but then again, who is? He has blundered with the Afghanistan withdrawal and now with the Haitian refugees. He also has done a lot of good, too. He ramped up the availability of vaccine. He has comforted so many who are grieving and fearful. There is much more access to him in the administration than before. I encourage your panel to please avoid discussion about Mr. Trump. That's hard to do, isn't
it? I think it's a big mistake. You know, Hitler had his time. He was coming up. They put him in jail for a little while, and he was back with force. I think this guy, Trump, is the greatest threat to the American democracy we have ever seen, ever. So therefore, I think to put our heads in the sand is a big mistake.
And
yeah, I agree. You ignore Trump at your own risk. It's you got to talk about him. You got to keep your eye on him, because if we don't, I don't like the alternative.
And then we also have this letter real quick from Bill. I cannot understand how Trump can run again. So many lies, so much irresponsibility, so many felonies. Are you saying that he won't be indicted or tried before 2024? I am dumbfounded. We'll take a break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Vera Karius-Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, and Dan Irizarry. So the other big story I wanted to get to is, of course, the Haitian border policy and what is going on. And we have been talking about the story all week. We'll continue to talk about it. Biden pushes deterrent border policy after promising, quote, a humane approach. The deportation of Haitian migrants is a stark example of how President Biden has deployed some of the most aggressive approaches to immigration put in place by former President Donald Trump. The images could have come straight from Trump's immigration playbook. Mounted Border Patrol agents rounding up desperate Haitian families at the southwestern border for rapid deportation from the United States. In fact, the aggressive effort to quickly clear a makeshift camp in Del Rio, Texas, of more than 15,000 Haitian migrants was part of a Biden administration response that included, quote-unquote, surging agents to the overrun area using a public health immigration rule invoked by Mr. Trump to send many people home. President Biden's spokeswoman said the scenes of agents on horseback were horrific and not acceptable or appropriate. Vice President Kamala Harris said human beings should never be treated that way. The Department of Homeland Security said it was investigating. Still, the deportations are a stark example of how Mr. Biden, who declared on February 2nd that his goal was to undo the moral and national shame of the previous administration, is deploying some of the most aggressive approaches to immigration put in place by Mr. Trump over the past 4 years. Dan, let's start with you.
Well, I think it's important to understand the reason why so many Haitians have migrated. I think that some of the reading that I've done points to the fact that many were refugees after the hurricane, I think it was 10 years ago, and many fled to Chile and Brazil. And they found that their welcome was short-lived, and they heard about a change in policy here in the United States for 150,000 Haitian migrants already in country, I think. And according to the sources that I've read, a lot of misinformation spread that now it was the time for Haitians to come and get visas. So again, nuance is part of this discussion, and you know, we have no tolerance for nuance anymore as a country.
No.
And so some of these elements are missed. So there is a reason why these things are happening that are outside of our control. Now, what is within our control is immigration policy, and we already know that the Republicans will never go for anything except for, you know, spikes on the border wall and a no immigration policy.
Alan?
Well, you know, the fact is that the horse is out of the barn, obviously. The idea that picture will do more harm to American foreign policy than anything you could possibly name. As you know, the guy is whipping somebody from his horse. It is just the worst kind of PR that you could have. And obviously, we depend on the fact that the guy is President Biden, is President of the United States, and that this is his province. I can't do it from sitting here, nor can you, Joe, or anybody else. So there has to be a cogent, well put together policy of how to exclude people who are testing the limits of what our immigration law is.
So I have to ask the question, though, Alan.
Sure.
And I mean, the optics are bad. I just don't know who in a room thought that those optics could ever be good.
Well, yeah, please go ahead, Vera.
Well, I mean, the thing is, there are decisions implemented along the border that are not controlled by decision makers in Washington, D.C., or even in the regional offices along the border. This is Border Patrol officers on horseback chasing and beating black Haitians. This is what people sometimes do when they're empowered along the border and they feel justified.
Why were they empowered? Why were they empowered, number one? And number two, yes, they were caught. But this would go, if that picture didn't exist, we wouldn't know, you know, we probably wouldn't be talking about this, but it's still the policy. The policy hasn't been changed.
He's the president of the United States,
right?
Biden. He's responsible for the people who are working for him and will be held that way. And
yes.
So you can't, right? I mean, you just can't say these are outliers who...
No, these are not outliers. Yeah. I'm saying that it's common practice along the border. If you go to the border and spend some quality time there, you see behavior like this it's been like this for 20 years.
Quality time at the border? Go ahead.
I get it, but it is the responsibility of the head person to lay down the law and to create the kinds of situation where people will not happen.
Absolutely.
You have to hold somebody responsible.
All I want to say is that this is a particularly bad film that is now available generally, but things along those lines have existed for decades. What really bothers me about the Biden administration at the moment is that they're blocking access for Haitians and others along the border to actually use the legal asylum system to get their credible fear screenings. That is part of required U.S. law. If you arrive on the border, you have a right to be interviewed and heard and explain your situation. What the Biden administration so far has permitted was loading people onto planes and flying them back by, I think, 1,500 or 2,000 have been returned to Haiti. Irrespective of if they actually recently came from Haiti or, as Dan said, had lived for years in Brazil or Chile. So that is issue number one. And that has already been reversed. Now, all of a sudden, the last couple of days, because of all this critique of not following existing U.S. asylum law, you know, people are now let into the country. They apparently have cuffs around their ankles so they can be traced. But so what is the actual process? Some have been sent home. Tens of thousands are now allowed in the country. Others are in those dreadful border encampments. We definitely need a revision of immigration law, and we most certainly need to ensure that we follow existent asylum regulations so that everybody can get at least a basic screening. That is U.S. law.
I wanted to go longer on this, but I want to there was a breaking news story, which I think is interesting. I just want to get a couple perspectives before we have to go in about 3 minutes. But we have just learned that the New York State Health Commissioner Howard Zucker has resigned, has submitted his resignation to Governor Kathy Hochul. Hochul said, "I made it very clear in my first day in office that I plan to build a new team. But I thank Dr. Zucker for his willingness to stay on." I assume that writing was on the wall, right, Alan?
That writing was on the wall. Yeah. We knew that. That's just the way that she's proceeding. Whether that helps her or hurts her, I don't know.
Zucker was appointed to the position by former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who resigned in part surrounding a scandal that he and Zucker's health department publicly undercounted the number of deaths in nursing homes due to COVID-19. Ira, anything to say about that?
No, the writing was on the wall. The only question is what took so long. This was a high-profile aide of Cuomo, and rightly or wrongly, he is forever tied with Cuomo at the hip, and Cuomo is gone, and so should all of his key people be gone. So no surprise, don't have any problem with it, just wonder what took so long.
Dan?
No comments.
Okay.
I'm a state employee, don't forget.
Oh, that's right. You're a state employee. I forgot. I did forget that, and I apologize. I won't put you in an uncomfortable position, even though I already did. Okay. We're out of time.
I'm on personal time right now. I just wanted to be noted.
Yes. Well, we'll send the paperwork to whoever wants to see it. My thanks to everybody. Thank you for being here. Alan, good to see you.
Thanks,
and Vera, Ira, Dan, thank you all. We'll be back right after
this. Thank you, Joe.